It's called The Black Man Is God.
Yeah, the God.
It's called The Black Man Is God.
Gotta
next
album. The level
this is for
play.
The children. You know what I'm saying? I got
you
this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all this fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can move me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my film that day?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
Well, it wouldn't be April without the NFL draft. And it wouldn't be the NFL draft without the mock draft. That's right. It's the return of everybody's favorite mock draft, the mock draft, featuring our draft expert at HipHopSportsReport.com. The incomparable Mark Hicks is back to join the show to talk NFL draft. It is the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast coming to you on a Thursday evening late. April the 18th is when we're recording this of 2024. I believe this is our 11th NFL mock draft, which is hard to believe, but I think that's where we're at right now, man. So we put some years into this, Mark Hicks. How you feeling this evening?
I have the gray hairs to prove it, and I'm doing well, cousin. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm getting there. I got a couple grays. You know what's funny? You know what's funny about that is that I saw I may or may not have been in a meeting this week at my day job where it was a conference room and there was cameras from up above, like an aerial view of the meeting room, and I could see myself in the aerial view of the meeting room, and I may or may not have had that screen blown up on my laptop and on the projector in the room, and I may or may not have been able to see the male pattern baldness starting to matriculate its way down my scalp, starting from the crown of said head all the way down, and I may or may not have had to gather myself and take a moment to collect myself before continuing in the meeting while not yet embarrassing myself in front of my colleagues and peers. So I'm just saying,
at least your colleagues don't say that you're 80. they comments that I'm 80 years old. I'm like, man, I'm only 52, man. Chill out with that noise.
I mean, people think I'm young. On, like, I'm just trying to keep the hair that I have and let it turn gray. But like, I saw that aerial view. I'm like, oh no. I'm like, what is this? You know, so anyway, I'll have to figure that out on my own time. But speaking of, I should point out that, you know, I'm going to be next week given the opportunity to do something really cool. I'm not going to get into great detail about it here, but in short, I will be doing some podcasting that I will be compensated for, and I will be on the road. I will be doing some podcasting on the road, and there's a sports element to it, and it's an amazing opportunity that has come because I've had the privilege of doing this podcast for you all for the last 11 years. And so to anybody that's ever listened to a show, thank you. To anybody that's ever told somebody about the podcast, I appreciate you. Mark, thank you. And thank you to all the many guests that I've had over the years, including your brother, my brother, family members, Master Ace, Drew Joyce II, the head coach. You know what I'm saying? We've had so many guests over the years, even John, my man John Rivera, who blessed the podcast just last week to talk about Drake and Kendrick and J. Cole, and you know, anybody that's been on the podcast, man, I appreciate y'all and thank y'all for the support because it helped me get to this point. And who knows where that'll take us? Maybe that'll take us into the next thing. But but in the meantime, we are here to talk football. We're here to talk football. It's the NFL draft. Before we get into the mock draft, you know where to find us. HipHopSportsReport.com is the website. It's the preseason podcast of the year. You know that we're on X. You can find us at HHS Report. The same with Facebook. You can find us there at HHS Report. And always, please go ahead and like and subscribe to the podcast and favorite it. Tell folks about it. You know what I mean? All that stuff. Not only does it not go unappreciated or unnoticed, but it is having an impact on my life beyond just the walls of these podcasts. So again, thank you so much. The mock draft, for those of you who are new to this, we true to this over here. So the original podcast that tells you what each NFL team ought to do with their draft selection in the top 10. This is not about telling you who we think is going to get picked. Okay. You can go to the mock drafts for that, but the mock drafts are a bunch of baloney because people make up stuff to get clicks and, you know, they're built on nonsense most of the time. And the whole idea behind it, it actually inflates the draft stock of some players from time to time. We've seen that before. And so we came up with a strategy to talk about the draft, but we tell you what these teams ought to be doing with their picks, not where they necessarily will go. So Mark Hicks, our resident draft expert, he drives the bus for this, and he's going to kick us off this evening with the Chicago Bears in my backyard, in my neck of the woods here in Chicago. The Bears are 7-10, or they were 7-10 last year, and they've made some changes, as many of you may know. In case you didn't know, Justin Fields, no longer their quarterback. He's actually packed up his things and he moved to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm so sorry to hear that, Justin, but that's where he's going.
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah, we will pray for you. No doubt. But getting back to the Bears, though, they moved off Justin Fields, and frankly, this is just my editorial opinion. I believe that that was the right decision, not at all because of Justin Fields and his inability or lack of talent, but it has way more to do with the contractual ramifications of keeping him around, because Justin Fields' contract was coming to an end. His rookie deal was coming to an end. I think maybe this year or after next year, they were going to have to make a decision on whether or not they wanted to extend him. And if they did, he would be making considerably more money. And although I feel that Justin Fields has talent, and although I believe that from one Justin to another, that Justin Fields was kind of getting a raw deal in Chicago, he didn't get supported the right way, and that I'm still not convinced that Trevor Lawrence is better than him, believe it or not. Yet and still, Justin Fields' contract made it in such a way that the Bears kind of had to make this call, because they weren't getting the level of production from him that they needed in order to get to where they wanted to go ultimately. And so to then reward him with a contract that would have probably made him one of the 15 highest paid quarterbacks in the league when they were getting bottom 10 production from him, even though it wasn't all his fault, that's a tough pill to swallow and hard to justify. And so therefore, I think they had to reset the clock, the Bears did, the financial clock, that is. They had to reset that clock, move off Justin, and draft the quarterback in round one. And that's before you get into the whole, you know, somebody's going to lose their job. Right. You know what I'm saying? You pass on Caleb Williams or whatever, you're going to lose your job. If, you know, this is a job security play as much as anything for Ryan Poles, the GM, and all that. So that's just my personal opinion on that. It was the right decision. Justin and the Bears, that kind of, you know, they needed to part ways. But beyond just that, and getting back that conditional 6th-round pick next year from the Steelers, the Bears did sign DeAndre Swift. They re-signed their superstar corner, Jalen Johnson. They brought in Kevin Byard, who's a great safety. Maybe a little long in the tooth now, but he's been a very good safety for a long time. Mr. Simone Biles, Jonathan Owens, he's coming to Chicago. And remember, the Bears traded this for this pick from the Panthers. This is the Panthers' pick. And the Bears managed to win 7 games, and yet still end up with the number one pick in the draft. The heist of a lifetime, and the Panthers are basically looking like the worst franchise this side of I don't know what. I mean, they're just looking as pathetic as all get out at this point. And so, fortunately for the Panthers, they're going to have to sit on the sideline and watch the Bears draft a quarterback who's much better than Bryce Young, no matter who they get. So, having said all of that, Mark.
Yes, sir.
You are now Ryan Poles. I have sprinkled some fairy dust on you and have made you Ryan Poles for a day. What will you be doing with this pick?
So the obvious opinion of everybody who's been involved would be to draft Caleb Williams, a quarterback from USC. Even though Caleb Williams is, they look at him as this quintessential, you know, you can't pass this guy up. I'm actually going to pass on him. because the person I'm looking at for the Chicago Bears. Oh, yes. Yes, sir. Yes,
no, we're coming in hot on the mock draft.
We're coming in hot. You know, it's 2024, man. We can't play around here.
No, we ain't playing. You're coming to your neck with it.
I'm going with the guy. I'm going with the guy who won the Heisman. I'm going with Jaden Daniels for LSU, man. Because looking at football this year, I'm basing this off of what I saw this year and what I can see in the future. The future of the NFL, guys like Caleb Williams, guys like Jaden Daniels, these types of quarterbacks. This is the new breed of quarterback that's coming in here now. You can't just the days of the Kirk Cousins, the Tom Brady's, the Matt Ryan's, the Peyton Manning's, the quintessential pocket passer, those days are long gone. You have to be able to have some type of mobility. You have to be a dual threat quarterback to succeed in this league. And finally, the NFL has caught up with the college game, because the college game has been dealing with this now for years. And the NFL has finally caught up to that type of process, because now a lot of quarterbacks that are coming into this league are now dual threats. And to me, Jaden Daniels has a lot of tools that I really, really like. And I think he will be the guy that the Bears should take. Now, they won't take him. I guarantee you they're going to take Caleb Williams. But this is the guy, if I was running, I would roll the dice and I would take Jaden Daniels on the pick for the Bears at one.
That's a fascinating start to the mock draft. And if it were not to work out, you would be tied to a rocket and shot into the sun. Okay, if you ran the Bears and this didn't work, because everybody and their mama is convinced that Caleb Williams is that dude. So this is one of those stake your reputation on it type dice rolls. Like, this is like, I'm going to bench my $100 million quarterback and roll with the 199th pick of the draft that was in the sixth round to carry me to the Super Bowl. Like, that's the kind of dice roll you're talking about here. Even though people are in agreement that Jaden Daniels is very talented, Caleb Williams is the consensus number one guy. And now let's, having said that, we've had these discussions in the past about these guys who appear to be that and aren't that. You know, the last one that we had, in my opinion, was Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence was talked about as he was the guy from the time he was a freshman at Clemson. I never saw it. I never saw that level of talent in him. You didn't either. And we talked about that on the mock draft, whatever it was, 4 years ago. Y'all can go back and listen to that on the website. It's there. The audio lives, right? So, I posted about it all this past season on Twitter, like, or on X, whatever you call it. Where is this no doubt you can't miss talent in Trevor Lawrence? I don't see it. And his whole first year got excused because of Urban Meyer. We just have never seen Trevor Lawrence be what they purported him to be, right? And so the next greatest thing ever is Caleb Williams. And Caleb Williams is putting up stupid numbers in his junior year, or not junior year, but last year, and in route to him winning the Heisman Trophy. This year, that guy was Jaden Daniels, putting up just obscene statistics. I'm talking like 40 touchdowns to 4 interceptions, over 3,800 yards. Like, and that's not counting his rushing. Like, I think he probably ran for like 1,000 yards or something.
Yeah, he ran for 1,134 yards.
And 10 touchdowns. And 10 touchdowns. So to bring his total to 50 total touchdowns and nearly 5,000 total yards. So on an LSU team that was good but not great, you know? Right. So I hear all that, but allow me to push back just a little bit, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
It's two big things with Jaden Daniels. First of all, I didn't realize he was 6'4". He's bigger than I thought. Yeah, let me correct myself. Uh-huh. He's taller.
He's taller than
what I thought.
Yes.
Tall is good for this position. Ask Baker Mayfield. However, I'm never going to pass up a time to take a shot at Baker Mayfield. However, he's only 210 pounds, Mark.
Correct.
So we're talking about dual threat, and we're talking about playmaking out of the pocket, running around, scrambling, and we're talking about a dude that is 210 pounds. He's got a receiver's body. He's 6'4", 210. That's a great flanker, you know what I'm saying? Like, put him out on the edge and let him run some nine routes. That's awesome. But we're talking quarterback. You would want a guy with a little more weight on him to be able to withstand the punishment more consistently. That's the first thing. The second thing is that he's already 23 years old. So this is a guy who I believe got an extra COVID year in there.
Yep.
He's a senior and he's playing what, 4 or 5 years? I think he was at Arizona State and had a weird, he left under some weird circumstances when he was there.
Yep.
He goes to LSU and blows up. But, you know, again, he's old. You know who else is old is Bo Nix. I don't know if we're going to talk about Bo Nix tonight or not, but Bo Nix, I think, was in high school when I was in high school. Like, we're like the same age, basically, right? Bo Nix and I. You know what I'm saying? And I'm exaggerating because I'm much older than him, but yet not really. And so, and so, but you see,
Bo Nix got 12 years old. I'll tell a little bit.
Exactly, exactly. But like, but you know, so even though Bo Nix will be graduating and still yet old enough to like run for president, he still is putting up crazy numbers in college. And it's like, well, no wonder, because he's been a college football player for like 7 years. And so when you've been a college football player for that long, like, yeah, the game's going to slow down and you're going to look really good. It's not. Right. So my point is that Jaden Daniels putting up these ridiculous statistics as a super duper red shirt senior ain't the same as Caleb Williams putting up those crazy stats as a sophomore last year. Does any of that, register with you, or how does that sway, or does it not sway your opinion at all?
Since you brought up Baker Mayfield, like the fact that Baker Mayfield was older than all the other quarterbacks that was coming out in his draft, whereas like somebody like Sam Darnold was probably the youngest that was coming out in that draft. You could tell the difference from not necessarily a maturity standpoint as a person, but a maturity standpoint as a football player. You can see the difference. And I think the difference between Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, is the maturity factor as a football player. You're absolutely correct, and that's the major hang-up with Jaden Daniels, is the fact that he's only 210 pounds. I mean, A.J. Brown is like 20 pounds heavier than he is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the crazy part about this. It's almost hard to imagine or fathom that, but that will be his what he's going to have to work on.
I mean, the book is out on Jaden Daniels. Everybody knows the knocks on him are his frame and his age.
Correct.
You know, so what I'm telling you, I like to pride myself on giving y'all something different here, but what I'm telling you isn't anything that you guys already haven't heard before. I'm not going to lie. You know?
Right. Right. What I like about the fact that he is older is the fact that he also has played in 55 games in college and started all 55. To me, that speaks volumes and about not only how talented he is, and this is the fact of just, you know, despite the fact that he has a slender frame, he has still been able to play every game. Now, you're talking about, you know, kids to, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids to 28, 29, 30, 31, 32-year-old men. Big difference. I get that. And I was at the same fears I have with Jaden Daniels was the same sort of fears I had with Lamar Jackson when he came out, because he was also slender and had a slender frame too.
Yep.
And he bulked up enough to the point where he's been able to withstand some of the injuries that he's been able to deal with. There's been times where, you know, it hasn't hurt him to the point where this guy's won two MVPs already. He's already has a Hall of Fame ballot already set up for himself. And Jaden Daniels, I think the biggest thing with him is his ability as a runner is what the craziest thing that stands out first. He has great straight line speed. He's able to, because he's older, he's able to process defenses a little bit, make it more than just the one read. And although he doesn't have the arm talent that Caleb Williams has, he has a strong enough arm and he has enough arm talent to, you know, to make plays, throw in the tight windows, all these different types of things that will make him an exceptional quarterback in the league. And I just think that you have to be able to surround him with talent, first of all, and also be able to have a offensive mindset or offensive coach that's going to help groom this kid and help take him to the next level. Because just like you said, that the process will slow down for him in college, it's going to be even more imperative, and especially also because of his age, that he also picks up this stuff quickly in the pros. So it's going to be imperative on that whoever the offensive coordinator and the quarterback coach is, that they really sit down and work with whoever they take. But for somebody like Jaden Daniels, they're going to have somebody who is a key offensive mind that's going to help him. Well, but that's why I would take him. I would take him at over Caleb Williams, because there's other things that I, you know, with Caleb Williams that makes me a little bit hesitant, that I will speak about later on. But that's why I would take Jaden Daniels first.
Well, Pro Football Focus says that Jaden Daniels is the best deep passer in this draft. So some people think Pro Football Focus is nonsense, but for those of you that tend to believe in that, it's a cult religion or something, if you believe in that, but no, if you think that there's validity to that, then that's something to consider. But with the second pick, then the Commanders are in shock because Caleb Williams potentially may have fallen in their lap. They earned their number two pick of the draft. They were there by merit. This is a merit-based selection. The Washington Commanders, 4-13 last year, just an absolute joke. Although I will say that if you look at the NFL, if you look at the final standings from the NFL season this past year, the NFL has just mastered this parity thing to the point that pretty much every team in the league is like 8-9 or 9-8. And if not, and I don't mean that like literally, but I just mean. Right. There are very few awful teams in the league.
Correct.
And there's very few juggernauts. Like, you had a couple of very good teams last year, but the rest are in the middle. And I mean, there's only a couple of bad teams. The Commanders are one of them, but they've been active. they've been getting busy in the offseason here, Mark. They signed Austin Eckler. They signed Bobby Wagner. They signed Ertz. They signed Dante Fowler. They signed Marcus Mariota. They signed Cleveland Farrell. Now, you may say to yourself, Justin, all them dudes is washed or trash. And I would say to you, yeah, you might be right. Yeah. No, I mean, but no, I'm kidding. I don't think Austin Eckler's trash or washed. But, you know,
right.
But do I think all those guys' best years are probably behind them? Yeah. Yeah. But probably. In spite of that, they are making moves, and they're trying to bring a veteran presence and leadership to that locker room. They also have the 36th and 40th pick of this draft. So three picks in the top 40. All of that spells turnaround in an NFC East that is all of a sudden kind of up for grabs. If Philly may be still coming back next year, looking like Philly again, but they were just an absolute train wreck the second half of last season. And the Cowboys, roster construction wise, seem to be falling off a clip, like Wile E. Coyote status, like rapidly into a poof of smoke on the desert floor. So the one thing that frightens me most about the Commanders, and I'll be brief, is that they hired Dan Quinn to be their coach. That I'm not saying Dan Quinn's a bad coach, but he's known for one thing, Mark. Dan Quinn is known for one thing, and that is being on the sideline up close and personal to witness the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history put on by the GOAT. That was on his watch, and his defense allowed that. And he's a defensive-minded guy, and that was his defense that allowed the GOAT to carve them up in the fourth quarter in OT. But I digress. Who should the Commanders take with the second pick?
Well, without question, I mean, Caleb Williams will be the pick. It's not like I have a thing against Caleb Williams. I think he's a phenomenal player. I think anybody who drafts him would be lucky to have him, because he has a lot of tools, a lot of things that I really like as a football player. He's probably the best quarterback in this draft that can throw on a move. He creates plays out of nothing. Better than probably anybody in this draft. And he will make an instant impact in the league just because of that. And even though he's a young guy, he still is pretty mature for his age. My problem is that there's been too many expectations been placed on this kid before he's done anything in this league. And the crazy thing about it, and this is one of the reasons what worries me about him, is if he starts hearing the noise, if he starts reading the press clippings, if he starts hearing what people are talking about him on sports talk radio and all these other TV shows like First Take and First Things First and you know, the Colin Cowherd show and all these different shows. He starts listening to these people. I think that's where the problem comes in, because it's not about the talent. It's not about his ability. It's all about what's between the ears, and keeping him focused is what's going to be key. Where he was at Oklahoma and now at USC, he played in 37 games. He started 33 of them. He has all the tools to be, in my opinion, he has all the tools to be great. Where he falls short for me is, mechanically, he can get out of sorts. And one of the biggest things, and this is something that when I did my final research on Caleb Williams in particular, he was extremely good at some things, but he also was really poor at others. So, like, I'll give you a good example. His biggest problem or his biggest situation is he has rare football awareness and everything like that. You talked about his last couple is year where he won the Heisman, how great he was. But his problem was, or his biggest issue is that he has 33 career fumbles.
Daniel Jones just heard that and said, "God damn!"
Yeah. Right, exactly. 16 of his 33 came last year. And that's a byproduct of two things. Number one, he holds onto the ball too long because he's trying to make a big play every play.
Yes.
That's something that has a quarterback coach or somebody have to get in his head and stop that nonsense right now, or he's going to have a hard time in this league, because things are going to be coming at him very, very rapidly. You think college football players are fast? Wait till you get to the league and you're dealing with the best of the best. So you're not playing any cream, but even the worst teams in the league, you got, you know, guys who were all Americans, guys who were, you know, first team all Americans, Heisman Trophy finalists, the whole nine yards that are on these teams. So, you know, he needs to understand that his biggest detriment to his career and the biggest upside to his career all stands with him protecting the football. He has to protect the football at all costs. Protecting the football is not just about throwing interceptions. It's about not taking sacks. He also had a high sack total because he held onto the ball too long trying to make the big play. And then people automatically criticize the offensive line, but it's not necessarily the offensive line or the skill players. Sometimes he has to learn how to throw the ball away. He needs to learn how to not, you know, take what the defense gives him instead of trying to go for the big play all the time. You know, those are things, those are nuances that scare me about him, because those are bad habits that can continue to be a detriment or albatross to his career if he doesn't fix that. And he has to get with a very strong offensive coordinator and quarterback coach to help him break those habits. You know, Brian Daboll, the coach of the Giants, got a lot of pats on the back for what he did with Josh Allen. But when you think about it, the offensive coordinator really doesn't spend time with the quarterbacks like that, because they got time. They have to deal with game plans. They have to set up the entire offense. They got to do a lot of different nuances. So they don't spend a lot of time personally with the quarterback. The quarterback coach is the actual one that spends time with these quarterbacks. So while Daboll was getting all the credit, and some of it was definitely deserved for what he did with Josh Allen early in his career, most of that praise should actually went to Ken Dorsey, because Ken Dorsey was his quarterback coach. He was the one that was working with him every day. And he's going to have to get a real good quarterback coach with him to help him break these bad habits before they become worse. Because you see now that Ken Dorsey's no longer in the picture, you see how Josh Allen has reverted back to his bad habits. You notice that.
What I notice is that Ken Dorsey needs to be the greatest quarterback coach that ever lived. If he is, then I'll be a happy man. let me just say about Caleb Williams real quick, and then we'll move on.
Okay.
He gets a lot of comparisons to Mahomes and, you know, Seattle era Russell Wilson. You know, I mean, I see it, though. I see the comparisons because, like you said, he holds on to the ball a long time. He runs around. He makes plays on the run. He's got a very strong arm, can just pull a rabbit out of the hat seemingly and make those magical throws. So I get the comp to Mahomes. I really do. I'm not saying he's going to be Mahomes, but I understand where it comes from.
Yeah.
Where I get a little nervous, honestly, and I, you know, call me old man, old school if you want. I don't care. The other stuff that comes with Caleb Williams, you know, that other stuff.
Yep.
Like the other stuff. I'm talking about like the painting of the nails and the pink cell phone case and crying in his mom's lap in the stands and having a big loss and crying at the podium. And they say, what do you want to do next? And he says, I want to go home and cuddle with my dog. I don't know if he's playing into it. Whatever he's doing, I don't think that that's going to fly in the NFL when there's 30-year-old grown-ass men that are looking for a paycheck because they got to put food on the table for their two kids. And, you know what I'm saying? They're trying to get to that third contract and they're trying to get to a Super Bowl that they've never been to in their entire career. And they've been playing 9 years in the league and they got a 22-year-old quarterback with a pink cell phone case talking about how he just wants to cuddle with his dogs and sit in his mama's lap after a bad game. Like that kind of stuff, I don't think is going to fly with grown men. I'm just saying, like, and maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm not in an NFL locker room. I could be wrong about that completely. I'm not even saying that it would affect me so much if he were my quarterback. I'm not even saying that that's the case. What I'm saying is, If people want to defend Caleb Williams for that stuff and said that that's nonsense and it doesn't matter, it has nothing to do with his ability to play the position of quarterback, I hear you. What I'm saying, though, is I would not be shocked if there were grown men in NFL locker rooms around the league that are looking at that dude like, what is that about? What is he on? I'm not rocking with whatever he's doing, and that might make him a little bit harder to follow as a leader. Especially when you consider that quarterbacks traditionally can be viewed as the prima donnas or the guy that gets the special treatment or, you know, the coach's pet, whatever, you know, and then you got these big offensive linemen and these defensive players. They're going to be looking at you like, just think about how the Seattle Seahawks looked at Russell Wilson.
Correct.
See what I'm saying? Think about that. Think about how the Legion of Boom players viewed Russell Wilson. This is similar to me. And it's like, you're going to have grown men looking at this dude like, this dude on some nonsense, man. I ain't rocking with this dude. And I think that could fracture a locker room potentially. So
I don't disagree with you one iota. I actually agree with you 1,000%. Those are the type of things. And that goes back to my point where I was saying it's between the ears with this kid. It, like you said, it's the other stuff. Now, I saw something today, as a matter of fact, on a TV show. I will not mention the name, but I saw a question that they posed on the TV show. They said, Scout said that out of all the people in this draft class, Caleb Williams has the most potential to make the Hall of Fame. Now, not to be an all-pro, not to be a pro bowler, not to be a multiple pro bowler or a multiple all-pro. We're talking about a gold jacket, man.
Yeah.
And those are the type of things that really irritate me because this kid has not stepped on the NFL field, period.
Well, they're trying to get people to watch the show, man. And they're ignoring the fact that Caleb has some weird mechanics sometimes and he's undersized too.
Yeah.
They're ignoring these things. And so they're going to put those kind of pressure on him. We got to move on, though.
Yes, sir.
The New England Patriots were 4-13 last year. I don't know if you heard this, but Bill Belichick left the Patriots, so that's kind of a big deal. They replaced him with Gerard Mayo. They had,
I said, and Robert Kraft's making an ass out of himself.
Well, they had the weird dynasty thing. You know, I watched it. I didn't love it. The documentary on Apple TV Plus or whatever. I thought it was going to be better than what it was. I didn't really love it. I just didn't like it that much. It just wasn't that entertaining to me or interesting. I mean, there were some stories in there here or there that were cool and interesting, but like some stuff, I don't know. Something about it was just off to me. I can't really put my finger on it, but I didn't think it was the best documentary ever. But that's neither here nor there. The Pats,
yeah.
they traded Mac Jones, so I think we may have even laughed at Mac Jones on the mock draft a few years ago when he came out. Like, we knew that he was not going to be any good, and for some reason, like every year, these teams talk themselves into some guy flying up the draft board. This year is JJ McCarthy. I don't get it.
Yep, I don't get it. I don't see it.
You know this guy is not good, but y'all tell yourselves that he's going to be good. So they got rid of Mac Jones. So there's definitely a quarterback void there. Although they did bring back Jacoby Brissett, and they did sign Antonio Gibson at running back, and our boy Sione Takitaki from the Browns. But give me your pick for three with New England. I think I know where you're going with it.
Okay. So if I'm New England, you need a quarterback. You know you really don't have one. However, I think this is a prime opportunity for New England to do a trade. Mm. And the trade partner that I have with them are the Los Angeles Chargers.
Mm. No, I really don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, so you know they're not trading up to get a quarterback because they have one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But when you look at their roster and what happened in the offseason, Chargers have a real gaping hole somewhere.
I think I know what position that is.
Position.
Yep.
And in my opinion, that position is wide receiver.
Yep.
And in my opinion, no disrespect to Malik Nabers, no disrespect to Rome Odunze. The best wide receiver, and in my opinion, probably the best player in this draft is Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State. So I have the Los Angeles Chargers trading, going up two spots from 5 to 3 with the New England Patriots to get their guy, and their guy is Marvin Harrison Jr.
I love it. I love the trade. I love the thought behind it. This is quickly becoming one of my favorite mock drafts ever. Yeah, man, I can see it. I can see, even though Belichick is gone, I can see the fingerprints of Bill still living on in the Patriots locker room. It definitely makes sense for the Chargers because the Cardinals pick 4th. They don't need a quarterback, but they could take a receiver. So the Chargers would have to get over the Cardinals, and the Chargers need a wide receiver, as you mentioned. I think it makes total sense from a lot of different perspectives. Harrison.
Who they throwing the ball to? Quentin Johnston? They ain't not throwing the ball to this dude, man. This dude, he's going to have to take a huge leap from last season to even get any targets thrown his way. So they need a guy. They don't have Mike Williams anymore. They traded Keenan Allen. They don't have any wideouts. So their skill positions are very vastly depleted. And with Marvin Harrison, like I said before, he's not only the best wide receiver. I've been hearing it's silly season right now. I've been hearing all this talk about, well, is Malik Nabers that really actually better than Marvin Harrison Jr.? No, stop it. Stop it. Just stop the noise. They need to stop that, because anybody who has sat down and watched college football, I don't care whether you are Ohio State fan or not, and watched this kid play with, after C.J. Stroud went to the league.
Subpar quarterback play.
Subpar quarterback play. Seriously, subpar quarterback play. And this kid has done nothing but produce.
Yep.
And they want to talk about, his ability to play against press coverage and things like that. He's not physical enough. But the kid's 6'4", and he runs like the wind. I don't understand what the problem is. Catches everything, has a huge catch radius. I mean, you can't go wrong with him.
You look no further than his last name and to see what his pops did when his pops is in the league, and you see the kind of pedigree we're talking about here. I believe Marvin Harrison is the best receiver in the draft. Although, I mean, I think the other receivers are excellent, so I don't think you could go wrong.
I agree.
I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's like crazy if another receiver got taken ahead of Marvin Harrison. I would not do that. And I think that the Chargers pairing Harrison with Herbert is like chef's kiss. You know what I'm saying? That is. And throwing Jim Harbaugh, by the way. So you have an Ohio State Michigan crossover there, but Harbaugh wins games. You know what I mean? A lot of Ohio fans don't like him. I get it. I totally understand it. The guy wins. He won at Stanford. He won at San Francisco. He won at Michigan. Yep. He wins. He won. You know, he was on the brink of a championship with the 49ers. He won a championship with Michigan. He turned around a Michigan program that was pretty trash for a long time. And it took him a while, but he got there and he did it. And he built something special there. So I'm not going to – like, the Chargers are coming, like it or not, because Harbaugh wins games. So you pair Harbaugh with Herbert. Like, what I like about what the Chargers have done is they're pretty much kind of tossing out the old guard. You know what I mean? They got rid of Brandon Staley. Thank God. That guy was probably the most incompetent coach in the league. They finally moved off of him a year and a half too late. And they bring in a bona fide head coach. Harbaugh's going to get the most out of his players, and he's going to win games. They already have the quarterback solved, right? They already got the quarterback solved. So that's
great.
That's like, you know, two-thirds of the puzzle right there, if not even more. You know, you got the quarterback, you got the coach. That spells massive success in the NFL. We know that. The rest of it can be pieced together, you know, over time. But you can, if you got those two pieces in place, and I don't think anybody would doubt that Herbert's a very good quarterback and Harbaugh's a very good coach, then I think you have a great foundation to build upon. So when they lose Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler and Mike Williams and Gerald Everett, and there's talks of them moving off Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa and all these people, it's like, okay, but they got the coach and the quarterback. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
For what it's worth, the Chargers did add the entire Baltimore Ravens backfield somehow. So now they have Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins back there. But but yeah, I think this move makes some sense, and it helps take advantage of Herbert in a win now kind of way, because Marvin Harrison will help you win games right now as a rookie. So you put Marvin Harrison back there, who I believe Marvin Harrison is, he's the best combination of everything that makes a great receiver that I've seen in a long time. Like, there may be guys that are actually better than him potentially that have come out in the last several years. You know, we've seen some of these dudes, Chase and Jefferson and some of these other guys, Garrett Wilson even. When you combine the size, the speed, the hands, the fluidity, the route running, the dependability, you know, the making plays in big games, the making plays with subpar quarterback play, knowing when the defense is game planning to stop you and still putting up numbers, all of those things, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the deal. So with the fourth pick now, the Cardinals, they added Jonah Williams in the offseason to help their offensive line, although I don't know how good he was because Cincinnati let him go, and he was a high pick for the Bengals.
Do you call that a help?
Yeah. But I'm just saying. They brought in – I mean, he's a name. He's a name. I mean, I've heard of him. They also brought in – they brought in Sean Murphy Bunting, who helped Tampa Bay win a Super Bowl a few years ago.
Yes, sir.
But the Cardinals, I think, have still made the cardinal sin of making Kyler Murray their quarterback of the future. I don't understand why they would do that. I kind of have a soft spot for the Cardinals now because Jonathan Gannon, the Cleveland guy, is their head coach. But what should they be doing with this fourth pick?
Well, with the fourth pick, I think they're in a situation if there are takers for them to trade back, they probably would. But I personally would stay right where I am. I know Marvin Harrison Jr. is off the board. But like I was saying before, it's not like the other guys, the other wide receivers that we're talking about here are trash. Malik Nabers would be my pick, wide receiver from LSU. And I've seen a number of his games sitting down here in Texas. This kid's a flat-out baller, period. And just the ability to separate his speed alone is what's amazing about him. What the thing that I really am drawn to him probably the most is his speed, but he just finds a way to get open, man. He'll outrun you. His catch radius, just like Harrison's, it's not as wide as Harrison's, but it's pretty doggone good, man. And he makes plays. He's a playmaker. He's not physically big. He's only 6 feet tall. He's probably like 200 pounds. But he I think
there's a toughness about him.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I wanted to say there's a toughness, a physicality about him that makes him special. And I think that's where it's what's going to carry him into the league. And I think with Arizona, even though, you know, you got Kyler Murray, whether you like him or not, and I'm not a huge fan of his, but he has the ability to extend plays and get the ball down the field and make plays for his receivers, throw a nice ball for his receivers to make a play on. I think somebody like Neighbors could actually explode in that type of an offense. So I think that's where, if I'm Arizona, that's where I'm going. They're going to need playmakers. They don't have them. I'm going to give them one, and that's Malik Neighbors.
So the Patriots are now sitting at 5, and they got a position to maybe get the quarterback that they wanted all along.
Yeah.
Trading back and picking up other assets along the way to help this roster that is just wretched. So how do they move at the 5th pick?
Oh, I'm going to tell you. First, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to tell you what they're actually going to do, regardless of where they pick. I will tell you what they're going to do, and I'm going to tell you what I would do. What they're going to do, they're going to more than likely draft Drake May, from the quarterback from North Carolina. If not J.J. McCarthy, which I think is a cardinal sin. You want to talk about cardinal sins? You draft J.J. McCarthy in the top 5, you're definitely asking to be fired. Like, fire me, please. Mm-hmm. And that's setting up Gerard Mayo for like a real rude awakening. But what I would do, and I'm not letting one game determine or deter me from this person. I'm swinging for the fences. I'm going for Michael Penix Jr., the quarterback from Washington. That's who I would take. If I'm at 5 for the New England Patriots, they need to go in a different direction. They need to get out of this classic pocket passer type quarterback situation that they've been dealing with for 20 years, because the times have changed. And that's one of the things why Bill Belichick is no longer there, because the game of football, to a certain degree, as far as X's and O's and just how it's played today, has passed him by. And Belichick, as great of a coach as he is, he's very rigid in his demands. He is very by the book on how he believes football should be played, and he is very hard to conform. I think for the New England Patriots to make their next step, they're going to have to pretty much just dump everything that they've done over the last 20 years and get with the time, with the actual life of the NFL today.
I think you could probably argue, though, that Drake May is more mobile than Michael Penix.
He is. He's much more mobile. But my thing with Drake May is I don't trust him. I don't trust him to do the little things well. Whereas Michael Penix, I trust him to do the little things well.
Well, Michael Penix is another one of those adult college quarterbacks that has been in the league.
Exactly, who's got like 12 years of college eligibility.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I agree. But I think they need an adult in the room.
Well, he's an adult, all right. Michael Penix got a 401. He got a 401k popping.
401k.
You know what I'm saying?
He's got an ARP card.
Exactly. Exactly. And supposedly he's actually really good at play action, which makes it funny because that means he's playing under center, which is kind of an older style of play. So, you know, when Michael Penix, he was probably playing a lot of play action back when he was a young buck coming up in the 90s. You know what I'm saying? But no, he's crazy accurate, lefty, you know what I mean? Got some decent size, had some injuries in college though, so that would concern me if I was a Patriots fan.
Concern me too.
But interesting pick though. Interesting pick. So that means the Giants are on the clock.
Out of those injuries, this is real quick. Out of those injuries, he had 45 starts in 48 games. That's pretty doggone good considering.
Oh, he missed a season though, didn't he?
That he had. He did, as a matter of fact.
Or two seasons. Something like that.
I'll think about it, but I believe you're right. He did miss some time, but I mean, when he was hit, it's going to be up to them to make sure he stays on the field, because he's not the type of guy that's going to sit up there and try to, you know, extend a bunch of plays. He's going to need help with surrounding him with the right talent and making sure that he's going to read the defense quick enough where he's going to get rid of the football. So he just needs talent around him, and I think he can perform. He showed that at Washington his last 2 years, so I can't see where it wouldn't work for him. So, but moving on to the Giants, I guess that's their next.
They are. They were 6-11 last year. Fabulous 6-11 New York Giants. Yeah. So interestingly, the Giants, they kind of bucked the trend and they took Saquon Barkley at the top of the draft several years ago. We had a big debate on the Mark draft about that. I would have taken him number one if I was the Browns back then. I think I still stand by that. Although Nick Chubb would have been the casualty in that, because Nick Chubb ended up getting picked in the second round by the Browns that same year. So it worked out for Cleveland, certainly, except for the fact that they drafted Baker Mayfield to be their quarterback at number one. So that was a mistake. But the Giants, they drafted Barkley, and now they're trying to get away from that. So they let Barkley walk to Philly, a division rival, no less. And then they even let Xavier McKinney, a safety, walk. And these are not premier positions where they had guys that were excellent players. Whereas they traded for Brian Burns, who was an edge rusher. And so now finally it seems like the Giants are trying to get with the times and be like everybody else in the league. And so they traded a 2024 second rounder and a 2025 fifth rounder for Brian Burns, and they signed him to a huge contract. They also added to the offensive line. They brought in Devin Singletary, Drew Locke as a quarterback, backing up Daniel Jones. But Joe Schoen, the GM there, is still, I think, regretting signing Daniel Jones to that big extension with $82 million guaranteed. I don't hear anybody talking about that. They don't want to talk about Deshaun's guaranteed money. They don't want to talk about Daniel Jones getting $82 million.
No doubt.
What should the Giants do at six?
Well, in my opinion, they're stuck with Daniel Jones. They made their bed. They're going to have to lie in it. But in order for Daniel Jones to succeed, they're going to have to give him weapons. Think about what the Giants have as far as weapons. They really don't have a ton. And when you have, three wide receivers that are in the class of Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Odunze, you got to get one of those guys. In my opinion, if you're stuck at six, you got to get one of those guys. So for me, Rome's the last one standing, so I'm going with Rome. And Rome is will bring a dynamic that's not only going to help Daniel Jones, but it's also going, because he's going to have a guy that's going to get open and a guy that they can feature in the offense, especially now that they lost Saquon Barkley. They're going to need all the playmakers they can get, and Rome's a playmaker. And so with that being said, it's not only going to help Daniel Jones, but it's going to open up the entire offense and allow Brian Daboll to do what he wants to do offensively, which he hasn't been able to do for the most part since he's been there, unless Saquon Barkley was 100% healthy. So I could never understand why they would let the one playmaker that they had on their roster go. And not only did they let him go, they let him go to a division rival. That's just, now they got to see him twice a year, just kill them in games. I don't understand that. So,
well, he's an older running back, right? So they're not going to prioritize keeping an older running back going for his second or third contract, I guess, who's had some injury issues. But Roma Dunze's got good size. He's another physical receiver. He helped make Michael Penix great at Washington and vice versa.
I agree.
And don't forget they drafted Jalin Hyatt last year. In the second round. So he's a burn. Round,
right? One pick before
Cedric Tillman to the Browns.
Cedric Tillman, yep.
Yeah. So they're pairing Hyatt with Roma Dunze to be their tandem of the future at receiver in this case. It would be pretty intriguing. Seventh is the Tennessee Titans. They were also 6-11. They're not hurting at receiver because even though they have an older DeAndre Hopkins, they just signed Calvin Ridley to a 4-year, $92 million dollar deal with $50 million guaranteed. They brought in Tony Pollard from the Cowboys and Lloyd Cushenberry, a center from Denver, to help out the offensive line. Somehow they got Mason Rudolph. He's backing up Will Levis, I guess. And then, in the strangest decision, they moved off of Mike Vrabel, who by all accounts is a fabulous coach. But they did get
I agree.
Bill Callahan in the building because his son is now the head coach, correct? That's Brian Callahan. Correct. So what is Tennessee doing then? They're kind of all over the map.
So, well, Brian Callahan, Bill Callahan, they've got their starts in the league on being offensive line coaches. And Bill Callahan is probably regarded as one of the best, if not the best, offensive line coach in the league, even at his age. So with that being said, there's a ton of offensive linemen that they could take. But I actually have another trade partner here.
Oh, this is the best mock draft ever!
Because this one here, because this team here needs a quarterback more than anyone. And now, because of what they did last year, the pressure's on this organization to really get themselves a quarterback. And that team that I'm talking about is the Denver Broncos.
Ooh, so I thought you were going to go Minnesota Vikings.
I was going to say Minnesota Vikings. Don't be surprised if Minnesota doesn't trade up too on next week. But I'm going to Denver because I think the sense of urgency for Denver is higher than the sense of urgency for Minnesota. So they're trading up from 13 to 7 with the Denver Broncos. And the Denver Broncos are going to take Drake May, quarterback from North Carolina, with the 7th pick. And Tennessee will drop all the way down to 13 because one thing that this draft is very deep in is offensive linemen. And they could get a very high quality offensive lineman at 13.
I think the Broncos are 12th, aren't they? Don't the Broncos pick 12?
Is it 12? I thought it was 13. You may be right.
I thought it was 12.
You're probably right. I mean, even if moving from 12 up to
7.
Yeah, moving from 12 up to 7, that's just as good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They're probably better off doing it that way. Yeah, they are 12, as a matter of fact. You're absolutely right.
I don't
13. It actually 12.
I don't have a strong, like, earth shattering opinion on Drake May. He seems talented enough, you know. I haven't seen a ton of him, but what's to like about him is the size. He's got the frame. He's 6'4", 223, and he's only 21 years old. So he's got the upside and the frame that reminds people of a Justin Herbert or a Josh Allen. You have to be leery of the lack of games he played at quarterback compared to his counterparts. He's not. So, like, these guys, these are COVID guys, you know, Caleb Williams and Penix and Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels. These dudes have been around for forever. And so they put up insane numbers and they knew how to play college football. Drake May's not that. He still put up numbers and everything, but he's just hasn't had that level of experience. You want to have experience. You know, you want a quarterback that started as a true freshman and played for 3 seasons and put up great numbers. And then you take him at 21 years old and he's put up phenomenal statistics. That's the guy you want. You don't want necessarily the guy who's been in college for 6 years and put up great numbers at the end, or the guy who put up great numbers, but he only started 18 games. Like, that's when it gets a little dicey. So Drake May, I think, is kind of in that latter camp. So it's something to keep in mind. And we've seen quarterbacks come out of North Carolina and not really take off. Most notably, Mitch Trubisky kind of didn't really pan out to the way
he got a lot of Mitch in him. Yes.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying he's got Mitch in him. I'm just saying that we've seen guys come from this school. North Carolina, for some reason, has always produced an insane amount of individual talent from a university who, A, is not a football school, and B, never has really a great football team. But they always have these great individual talents come through there. I don't understand it, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I would agree with you on that concept. Where I say he has a lot of Mitch in him is the fact that the lack of starts. But I also believe that this whole COVID thing, the fruits of the COVID labor that went on in 2020, like, just where all these kids lost a year of eligibility or lost a year of playing. And I think, you know, this is why you got an older class, so to speak, because they have to play catch up. And so I think Drake May is one of those guys, but he has the physical tools. He has the ability to do it. But in his defense, though, and this is where I pegged him to the Broncos, you know, nobody's going to want this kid to succeed more than Sean Payton, because now Sean Payton, his credibility's on the line, because at this point, he couldn't manage with Russ, even though Russ, when you look at it, by the numbers, he had a pretty decent season. The problem was he was not Sean Payton's guy from day one. Right. And it could be all the other crap that you was talking about earlier where, you know, Russ made himself bigger than the team or whatever. I personally didn't like the way Sean Payton treated him. Yeah, a guy who was a veteran and who's been in the league and has won a Super Bowl and things of that nature. I mean, he won just as many Super Bowls as Sean Payton has, in my opinion. And yet that's how you disrespect this guy. So my thing is, he's going to get Sean Payton's full attention. So I think he's going to do everything he can to help this kid succeed, because there are bad habits with Drake May that he's going to have to clean up: his footwork, his anticipation, things like that. That's why he's fourth on my quarterback list, because of the fact of, you know, his lack of starts, his lack of understanding defenses. And he's going to have to sit, even though Sean Payton's not going to have him sit. He's going to throw him out to the fire, but he's going to have to really invest time with this kid to make him successful. But
you're right about
the ability to be successful.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're right about the Broncos having a sense of urgency, especially playing in the division that they're in. We saw what the Chargers are doing.
Yeah.
You know, the Chargers, they're making moves, and they got their quarterback and they got their coach, and we know what the Chiefs are. Denver, they broke the bank to bring Sean Payton in there. You know, they gotta produce now. He got Russ out of the picture, so now he's got to bring in his guy at quarterback. And there's clearly a void there. So why not find your guy in the draft? And I guess Drake May could be that guy. The Falcons are on the clock. They pick eighth. This has to be a defensive pick, I would imagine. They fired Arthur Smith and hired Raheem Morris, who was a defensive coach. I believe this is his second go around as a head coach in the NFC South. He previously coached Tampa. And the Falcons most notably signed Kirk Cousins to be their quarterback, which sounds okay on paper until you remember, oh yeah, that's right, he tore his Achilles halfway through the season and he's like 35 years old. Other than that, right? You know, how was the show at the theater, Mrs. Lincoln, right? However that expression goes. They've sunk so much into Bijan Robinson and Drake London and Kyle Pitts and these offensive skill guys. It just seems like a defensive pick. They brought in a new defensive coach. I don't know who. They have their choice. They can get the best defensive player in the draft at eight. So what do you have them doing?
Well, I have them going, especially in a league now where there's a lot of passing going on. One of the things that I really appreciate what the Browns have done is really shored up their defensive backfield. And I think a lot of teams should take notice on that, especially when you're dealing with a lot of teams that go three, four, even five wide receivers or multiple sets where they have a lot of receivers out there. You're going to need more corners. In the Falcons' case, they're going to need a corner. And for me, Terrion Arnold, corner from Alabama, would be the best fit for them, because they need a corner. They need an edge guy. But for me, Terrion Arnold's upside supersedes anything that they could get on the edge. So this is where I would go if I were the Atlanta Falcons. I would go with Terrion Arnold as their pick at number eight.
Yeah, I've seen him compared to Darius Slay. I think he's a redshirt sophomore coming out, 6 foot, 189, a little on the smallish side, just a little. We got good height, but maybe a little heavier wouldn't hurt, but he seems to have the coverage capabilities that you would need, and the kind of the technique and footwork and those types of things from what is said about him. So it'd be a good pick. I mean, you're getting your opportunity to take the best defensive player in the draft, so you can't get mad at that. We already covered the Chicago Bears. They're picking ninth. I did forget to mention that they did trade for Keenan Allen, the Bears did. And you already have them with Jaden Daniels as their quarterback of the future. And now they're picking at 9 with the opportunity to maybe go with. I just dropped my microphone. Hang on. I did. It fell. They may have the opportunity. Damn. It's like messed up now. Have to hold it like Dirk Nowitzki. They may have the opportunity now to maybe go tight end. There's a really good tight end on the board, or they can focus their attention on the defensive side of the ball.
Or, in my opinion, which is one of the things that was a detriment to Justin Fields during his time in Chicago. I mean, you expected this guy to go out there and win games when you had basically a 5 Jonah Williamses and no offensive talent, and expected him to at the wideout position and expect him to win games. My thing is, if you're going to draft a quarterback, whether it's Jay Daniels, Caleb Williams, I mean, Justin Fields, Jim McMahon, you got to find a way to protect the guy. To me, the best offensive tackle is sitting up there on the board. If you're not drafting a wide receiver, a target for him to throw the ball to, you got to protect the guy. And so with that, I'm taking Joe Alt from Notre Dame, not too far from Chicago. Let him go right up the road. Let him play left tackle and protect Jaden Daniels and really be a cornerstone part of that offensive line and a cornerstone of that offense for the next 10 years. That's Joe, where I would go with.
Joe Alt is an enormous human. He is 6'9", 321 pounds. So, I mean, he's just a giant. And I saw one website that said, you know, that they would do comparisons to players. They compared him to Paul Bunyan. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how big this dude is. So, I mean, he is just a massive guy. Supposedly has very nimble feet, and you know, he's got some NFL bloodline working in his favor too. So, because his father was a lineman that played at Iowa and played for the Kansas City Chiefs and stuff like that. His brother Mark,
yes, sir.
He's got his brother Mark played hockey in Minnesota and played for the LA Kings. So he's got some athletes in the family, which makes sense because again, he is an enormous human. So Joe Alt. Going to the Bears, not a bad pick. To protect that skinny little kid back there, Jaden Daniels. You're going to need somebody like Joe Alt. You know, I mean, that makes sense. It only makes sense.
Yeah.
The Jets picked 10th, and Mark, the Jets finished 7-10, and the Jets did not fire Robert Saleh, and the Jets have a soon-to-be 41-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles injury, but on no shortage of conspiracy theories. He'll be under center. And they just keep getting older, this team. Tyron Smith. You know, Tyrod Taylor. They brought in Mike Williams to play receiver. Javon Kinlaw. These are mostly dudes that are like old or injured or both. And so it's a really strange kind of position to take if you're the Jets. So I don't know what they're going to do at 10. I think they made a trade also, did they not? I'm looking at it now. Hassan Reddick. Yeah. Hassan Reddick was acquired by the Jets right. as well. He's not injured or old. He's actually very good. So last pick of the mock draft, or the mark draft, excuse me. My mic keeps falling. Last pick of the mark draft is... Lay it on us. What are the Jets doing?
I mean, to me, it's obvious. I mean, you got a 41-year-old quarterback who still has his ACL laying on like the 30-yard line in the first game of the season from last year. And mainly because he was running for his life. I mean,
yes.
Come on, man. I mean, he was running for his life. And and what do you do to try to help him? You go and get older offensive linemen in free agency. Like, older and injured offensive lineman in free agency. Makes no sense to me. You have to surround this guy with as much offensive line talent as you possibly can. And so for me, the second offensive lineman in this draft is Olu Fashanu from Penn State. And that's where I would go. You can't possibly even think about bringing back Aaron Rodgers with that crappy offensive line that he had last year. And if for nothing else, to protect what's left of his ACL and the rest of his body, because he's going to get beat up, and especially in that division, he's going to get beat up a lot. And I saw some of the teams that the Jets are going to play next year. They're not any cream puffs. They're going to get some physical teams, and they need to protect this guy if they have any chance of winning. So that's where I'm going with. I'm going with Fashanu, Olu Fashanu from Penn State as their, hopefully their left tackle of the future.
Yeah, Fashanu, for sure. They had a left tackle. It was Mekhi Becton, right? And he busted out pretty much. You know? Yeah, well, like he didn't really pan out there.
He's one of those large guys that you was talking about, massive man who just continued to be massive. he just kept growing.
And he's excellent at massive.
He basically, yes, exactly. He was like in the NBA, Hot Plate Williams, you know, who ate himself out the league. Oliver Miller, who ate himself out the league. Pretty much that's what Becton, he ate himself out the league. You can be big and be stars like future stars like DeJuan Jones, or you could be somebody like Joe Alt, but you could also be a guy like Mekhi Becton who just never learns how to utilize his weight to his advantage and his size to his advantage, and has very little knee bend and all that stuff. Allow quicker guys
if the Jets don't invest in the offensive line with this pick, then they're just a joke of an organization. That's kind of where I come out.
I've seen mock drafts where they talk about Brock Bowers. Are you serious?
Exactly.
Right now?
We've seen a lot of Brock Bowers. No, do Aaron Rodgers a favor.
They deserve what they get.
Do Aaron Rodgers a favor and grab somebody that's going to keep him off his ass. Like, that's the best thing you can do for Aaron Rodgers. He's been sitting on his ass for 9 months. Like,
Think about it like this. He went from a organization which invested in the offensive line, like Green Bay, to an organization that did absolutely the opposite in the New York Jets. So trust and believe. I'm quite sure he's saying, look, you got to get some guys in here to protect me. You can't get these old geezers out here. These guys are broken up just like I am. Those guys aren't going to be able to protect me. I'm sure he's telling the front office that. And if there's anybody smart in that organization, they will go ahead and draft the offensive lineman to help this guy out.
Let's hope so. Real quick recap of the top 10. The Bears first shocked the world to take Jaden Daniels. The Commanders second will take Caleb Williams. Caleb goes on back to D.C., goes home. The Patriots with the third pick would actually trade with the L.A. Chargers, who would then take Marvin Harrison. The Cardinals would take Malik Nabers 4. The Patriots then at 5 would take Michael Penix, shocking the world yet again. Rome Odunze would go 6 to the Giants. Drake May in the trade up from Tennessee with Denver. The Broncos would then at 7 take Drake May. Terrion Arnold would go 8 to the Falcons. Joe Alt 9 to the Bears. And Olu Fashanu 10 to the Jets. Mark, you literally have like 90 seconds, literally, to tell me what the Browns should do at 54.
Well, the Browns have 4 picks or 5 picks, 54, 85, 156, 206, and 243. I predict that they're only going to have 3 of those players, select 3 players this year. So for me, I'm looking at they're in a rare era now that they could just get depth. So I would look at linebacker, I would look at defensive tackle, I would look at wide receiver, but probably more than likely, they're going to try to rebuild the offensive line. You got Joe Petonio, Wyatt Teller, who are making $13 million a piece at guards, and you don't know what you're going to do with Jet Wills at tackle, so I can see them investing in the offensive line as well.
Yeah, I think those are all the positions where I could see them making moves. Is there one player that you're praying that they make a move on? Maybe at 54? Maybe not. Maybe they don't have a guy. I don't know.
I mean, I have a if I'm going wide receiver wise, for example, I have Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, and I have Keon Coleman from Florida State. But if I'm going offensive tackle, like I said, we talked about Jed Wills in the last year of his deal. Normally, if you wait to the last year of your deal, you're not going to get extended.
Right.
So Roger Rosengarten, the tackle from Washington, Kingsley Suma-Atia from BYU is another guy. I would look to try to fill that spot. Also, look at a possibility at a running back. If one of these guys happen to fall to them in the third round, Trey Benson from Florida State or Jalen Wright from Tennessee, those are possibilities. Otherwise, you know, I would leave the running back class alone and just look at it for next year. You got Nick Chubb coming off a devastating injury. You're going to need as much help as you can get in the running back room. But, you know, those are the guys I would be looking at. Peyton Wilson, from North Carolina State, and Jalen Ford as linebackers. I would look at them, even though the Browns, technically they run nickel, so they're only going to use two linebackers at a time. So JOK is going to take one of them. Jordan Hicks, our cousin from another mother, is going to be manning those spots.
Yep.
But I would look to try to get one of those guys if I could, for future reference. And
Mark Hicks. Yep, Mark Hicks. Sorry, we got to cut you off, man, because we got to go. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Thank you all for listening. Please like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. It's the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast, preseason podcast of the year. It's the Mark Draft, always holding us down. And, we'll see where the chips fall. Hey, in Andrew Berry, we trust. All right? Thank y'all for listening. We out of here. Peace.
Peace.